Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Four of America's top newsmen are ready for this spontaneous and unrehearsed news conference. The questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story for us. Now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. One of the critical struggles of our time is the race to conquer space. The failure this week to launch a satellite into orbit around the moon has again fixed the country's attention on our space program. At least two committees of Congress are planning investigations of the lag between our achievements and those of the Soviet Union. Our guest today is a man who has played a vital role in trying to win the race for the United States, General John B. Medeiros. Since 1955, he has directed the Army's missile program. Under his supervision, the first Explorer satellite was successfully launched in January of 1958. A few weeks ago, General Medeiros announced that he is retiring from the Army in January, 2 years before his mandatory retirement age. General Medeiros has spent most of his adult life in the military service. He began his career at the age of 16 when he volunteered for duty in the Marines during World War I. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview General Medeiros, are Peter Hackus of NBC News, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Charles Cordry of United Press International, and Marcus Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular panel member, will be with us in our next program. Now, General Medeiros, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Childs.
General Medeiros, it's been 2 years and 2 months since the Russians took us by surprise and sent up that first Sputnik. Now they've had the moon shot, they've had the moon photographed, and one success after another. You've been with this program 4 years. Can you tell us why, in the simplest possible terms, they have held a lead of from 3 to 5 years over us?
It's a very difficult question to answer in a few words, but I'll try my best. In the first place, it's been often stated and is certainly true that they started out with bigger motors. They had the equipment with which to do the jobs that they have done since that time. This country, on the other hand, was not prepared to consider space that important at that time, prior to the Sputnik shot, and therefore had not brought out any motor power, rocket motor power, that was heavy enough for space work. We therefore have had to rely on the hardware that has been a byproduct of our long-range missiles.
Well, but why? That is an explanation, but it doesn't say why or where the fault lies, General Medeiros. Is it because the American public was asleep, or our leaders, or what was the reason?
Well, I think perhaps there was some lack of understanding of the international impact of the kind of performance that was turned out by Sputnik 1, 2, and 3, and the rest of the Russian vehicles. We had gone into the IGY program with the Vanguard, but it was purely scientific. And I think that the whole approach to it failed to understand the impact on the peoples of the world of that kind of an achievement.
Well, that was all right for 2 years and 2 months ago, but since then we've continued to stay behind, General Medeiros. Why is that?
We're in a position of having to develop entirely new and bigger hardware in order to compete with the Russians. And until we have gone through that painful and expensive process, we'll not be back in the race.
Mr. Cordry.
General, after each of these Russian successes, we seem to be stirred up, and then, according to various commentators, we become complacent again. Now, could you tell us, sir, what can the average American do? He is sometimes charged with being complacent about the space race, but what can he do?
Well, of course, we must assume that the actions of our total government, all branches of the government, are finally a reflection of the considered will of the people. Certainly, if that will is crystallized, those actions are a reflection of that will. Now, if it is clearly understood by the people and made apparent to all of their elected representatives, executive and congressional, that they intend to get in this thing to win, then I think we might go faster than we're going now. In that sense, every man is in an equal position making his views known. He has first to understand the problem, however.
You don't think we've made our will understood that we are in a race to win?
I don't think it's clear-cut yet.
Would you be in favor of longer work weeks, more taxes, that sort of thing to catch up?
If these things became necessary to catching up.
But, sir, are they necessary?
I think on the key projects that offer our only hope of catching up, that certainly the people who are available on those projects and know the most about them are ready and willing to work as many hours a week as the project demands. And they should do so.
Mrs. Craig.
General, you have said that the future of our country depends on the education of our youth. You're critical of our schools. Now, what would you do about our education?
This is a tough one for the few minutes that we have here, Mrs. Craig, but I'll try. We must get out of our secondary schools those things that can be, and properly should be, taught or trained into a child at home and in the church and by the community, and leave the time available in our secondary schools for those things that can only be taught by formal instruction. Only by that means can we put enough formal instruction, enough formal education into our children in the 12 years of secondary schooling to prepare them at all for the world that is coming, and certainly to barely prepare them for the kind of college education that is needed for the future.
Well, you are talking, sir, it seems to me, about a planned education with some eye on the national defense. Can you do that without federal control of education?
I am not talking about it with any eye on the national defense, except as the national defense is an incident to and part of the lives of all of our people, Mrs. Craig. I am talking about the necessary preparation of our youngsters for the kind of world that they will live in, not today, but 10 years from now when they get out of school, 20 years from now when they're in their maturity. And I think we have to do it. We have education now that is planned by someone, even if it's only the community or the local school board. If the feeling is strong enough and the understanding is good enough, our school boards all over the country will demand that kind of an educational preparation.
How can you be sure that you will get the scientists and the technicians and the laboratory people and the engineers that you need for national defense unless you have a say in that program?
I think if the education given through our secondary schools is adequate to the future and thus includes a sufficient amount of the basic understanding of the physical sciences, that this will help in attracting people to science and engineering at the graduate level, that is, in the college level. They are not introduced to them adequately now during the period when they're becoming interested in something they want to do.
Mr. Hackus. General, you've been quoted as saying, and this is a direct quote, I believe, "I am loath to agree that NASA, the Civilian Space Agency, is the final best agency for concentrating all U.S. space programs." What would your solution be, sir?
I can express my only effort at a solution in these terms, that I cannot feel that any complete effort to divide so-called civilian and military work in the missile and space field will give us our best answers. By one means or another, the whole of the missile, large missile, and space field must be brought together and worked as a unit if we are to get the best out of it. Because the interplay between the military level, so to speak, the missile projects, and the space field is constant and continuous, and the same techniques apply in great form.
Well, isn't this what they were trying to do when they took the so-called von Braun team and put them under NASA jurisdiction? Wasn't it a step in that direction?
This was a step to bring together the capabilities of carrying forward the civilian exploration of space, the scientific approach to space. But this still leaves it wholly divided from those efforts in military missiles, military weapons, and military-directed space operations that are being carried on and will continue to be carried on under the Department of Defense.
Well, then, what would your answer be? A Department of Space, a super agency of some kind, which would have jurisdiction over every single project? Is that what you're considering?
I'm considering that by some means they must be brought under single direction. Now, there are many ways that it perhaps could be done. Whether we're talking about a cabinet post in a Department of Space, but I'm not talking about space alone. I'm talking about the alliance between space and the missile business and the techniques and technologies that are required for both. So this must go deeper than just a space agency.
Mr. Childs.
General, according to reliable reports to our government, the Russians have fired a total of about 800 missile shots, that is, of every range, intercontinental, medium, and so on, to under 150 for this country. Now, while those figures may be secret, would you say whether this is roughly a correct ratio of five of theirs to one of ours?
I don't think that it is, no. I would not comment on the specific figures at all, but I think that the ratio is somewhat overstated in favor of the Russian activity.
How would you put it? 4-1? 3-1?
I'd rather not explore that too far. It just happens that I know too much about the actual numbers, so I'd rather.
Well, General, isn't that just the tragedy? The Russians know how many shots they've fired, and
that's
I'm
right.
Sure they know how many we've fired.
I don't think so. In terms of all of our missiles, I don't think they do know that.
Well, I'm sure they have a pretty good idea, wouldn't you think?
Just the big ones that you can see so well down at
Cape
Canaveral.
How do we know their total, Ben?
I certainly won't answer that question.
Well, General, shouldn't the American public know more about this? Why are these figures being kept from us?
I don't think the figures are really significant, as a matter of fact.
Why not?
And certainly the fact that the figures were known and known accurately would be, if any attempt were made to defend the figures, let's put it that way, this could well lead to injury to our own security program and our own ability to get information. But I say again, I don't think that the figures, as they might be adduced, are necessarily significant. Because the number of missile firings has to be related to the number of projects and to how many firings it takes to make a project succeed. We've developed some methods in this country of bringing projects through to a successful conclusion. To shoot an arrow into the air and let it fall you knew not where and hope for the best.
Well, I just want to be sure that I understand what you mean, General Medeiros. You mean that if they have actually fired 3 to 4 times the number of missiles that we have, it isn't important?
Not if you take it as a total statement of the number of missiles. I do not think it is important. Now, if you bring it down to certain classes and categories where it might become important, yes. But at this point, we're in such finite information that unfortunately, in the interest of our own ability to get information, we have to keep that away from public discussion.
Would you put the category of intercontinental missiles as one of the important categories where the number of shots is important?
I would say so, yes.
And they are far ahead of that, us
oh,
in the
no,
number
I
of
don't
shots.
Think so. No, sir.
Well, I've talked to other people in your department who do think so.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Cordray. General, you're rather deeply involved in development of the Nike Zeus missile to defend us against ballistic missile attack. Are you able to tell us whether, in your judgment, it could go into production now?
I can say that it could go into the beginnings of production now. In other words, we could begin now to take the necessary steps which lead up to production and which always take a good deal of time. However, at this stage of that program, as is the case in any such program, it would be a gamble, admittedly, because although we have every confidence and assurance, so far as we're concerned, that it is going to be a weapon of sufficient worth and value as a defensive weapon, that we should have it and have it at all costs, the moment at which you begin to stake your gamble on production is important, and there's an awful lot of money involved in this particular decision.
How much money is invested in this project already?
Just under $1 billion.
Just under $1 billion?
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know enough about it to know whether it should be ordered into production.
No, sir, because this is a matter of time, and this is an expensive program, and I mean expensive.
If
you have visited the facilities at White Sands, you can get some idea what we're talking about.
Well, now, could you tell us about how long it will be before the Army would be able to make a recommendation?
The Army has already made its recommendation.
On going ahead with early production?
That is correct.
General, a great many people seem to be asking why, with all your experience in this field and the need for experienced people, why you're resigning.
Well, first of all, I'm not resigning. I'm retiring. I long ago earned full retirement.
I was warned about this.
I long ago earned full retirement. Secondly, I have been in this very grueling and demanding post for 4 years. And to be in it at all, one has to be willing to just put everything that they have in it. I'm a little tired. But beyond that, I may say that I think that I owe it to my family to give some consideration at this point to my own future. And I'm rapidly crawling up on that critical age of 60, you know, when you're not so attractive.
Well, do you intend to devote some of your time to this education program that you were talking about, the desirability of letting people know where we do stand in this particular matter?
I certainly hope to be able to devote some effort to those things that I have believed in and still believe in, and to exert what influence I may in that direction.
It was reported quite widely not long ago that because of certain statements you had made about the lack of progress in our missile space program, that you were told by the White House to shut up. Is there any truth in that report?
I never received any such message at all.
Has any such message come from anybody in the Pentagon? This seemed to have been relayed, according to the story, from the White House through the Pentagon.
I think you can be your own judge by noting the comments that I have made consistently over the past month and a half and back as far as you want to go. I have not been told to shut up by anybody. I think that I use a sufficient degree of judgment in what I do say that they have no reason to ask me to close down.
Mrs. Craig.
General Alan Dulles of the Central Intelligence Agency told a congressional committee recently that under communism, the Russian leaders can do anything they decide on doing without asking the people. He said they are a country of concentration. They can concentrate on anything they think will enhance their power position in the world. Now, under our democratic system, can we match them? Can we catch up and beat them?
Well, there have been dictatorships, monolithic types of governments ever since we have been in business as a democracy. We have gone faster than any of them. I think this in itself is proof that the system is not necessarily controlling as to our progress. We can only match such a system, however, if we take advantage of the advantages of our system and minimize its disadvantages. The advantages, I think, are the greater eagerness that our people come up with in trying to do something that needs to be done badly. Our ingenuity that has been cultivated in our people and that is not well cultivated under a directed and authoritarian type of government. And that with that and our own competitive spirit, our desire to win what we do, that our system can go faster than any such monolithic system.
General, I didn't mean could we. I meant will we?
I don't know.
I'm
not a prophet.
We have military so far in your own field. And Mr. Dulles was speaking of the economic field of their very much greater rate of growth over ours. And he said that they would, within 10 years, if we didn't get a move on, draw dangerously close to us in the economic field. It isn't only a question of can we, but will we? Let me ask you, will we?
I don't know. I'm not an authority in that because I'm not a prophet, Mrs. Craig. All of us are trying to get across the kind of a spirit in our country today that will tackle this job in a way that we will. But whether we will succeed or not, I don't know.
You do not think we've got too soft?
It's a question.
Mr. Hackus.
One more question, General, on the so-called von Braun team transfer to NASA. At the time it was first discussed publicly, which was a little more than a year ago, there were a number of threats of mass resignations by members of the team, and I believe you said something about this type of thing might have hurt the nation's missile and space effort. Do you, first of all, still feel that way? And second of all, have there been any such mass resignations or any resignations?
I can answer both questions with the same answer, I think, Mr. Hackus. In the first place, the conditions this year are quite different from the conditions that existed a year ago. A year ago, the big booster and vehicle program was entirely in the hands of the Department of Defense. NASA itself was working in the fringe areas of space vehicles and was concentrating on using defense-developed vehicles to carry out scientific experiment. Now, these people of ours, their specialty is in the vehicle business, the big boosters and big vehicles that are required to get these things up where they are needed. At that time, then, there was not a coherent mission in NASA that would have taken all of this group as a whole. And this was, of course, backed up by the fact that they didn't ask for all of them. Now, this year, the condition is different. The Saturn program has been assigned to NASA along with this transfer. It means that they are definitely in the big vehicle business and will probably have a major part in the development of the big vehicles. So they now have a mission which enables them to take the team as an intact whole. This makes the big difference between last year and this year.
One further question, speaking of vehicles and projects. You have also said, I think, in the recent past that you think that certain marginal projects should be dropped from the nation's space program, but you've never been very specific on this score. Wouldn't it be a rather patriotic service to give us your opinion on this? And I'm thinking in terms, incidentally, of your own Jupiter project.
In due course, Mr. Hackus, I shall do so. But not now.
Mr. Childs.
General, the Air Force is developing a bomber, the B-70, that is said to have speeds up to 2,000 miles an hour. Do you think that within, say, 4 to 5 years, the manned bomber will still be an important part of America's defense?
I feel that the manned bomber is necessarily on the decline because of the growing strength of the air defense capability in terms of guided missiles, both our own and our opposition's. What the time period will be, I don't know, but certainly it is definitely declining, and I should think that 4 to 5 years would see it in a secondary role.
Oh, by secondary, you mean that it will be largely phased out, or?
I don't think it will be wholly phased out by that time, because the asset value of what we have in the business is quite considerable. And certainly, You can figure these things for a considerable period of time as being having a possible value. But it cannot carry the forefront of the defensive effort.
Mrs. Craig.
General, do you think Congress should have written the student loyalty oath into the National Defense Education Act?
Mrs. Craig, I can only answer that in one way. And that is that any individual who does not freely, willingly, and without reservation subscribe without request to everything that is in that loyalty oath, I will not support him with 2 cents of my tax dollars.
Mr. Hackes.
There's been a lot of criticism in the past, and even on this program, General, by you of the public for not being aware of the space race with Russia and not really knowing the critical nature of this challenge. Don't you think your criticism perhaps should be leveled at a little higher authority, perhaps even at the White House? In other words, I am a member of the public. I'm perfectly willing to give more taxes and do without a dishwasher and so forth, but I need direction. And I'm wondering if there shouldn't be some building of a fire somewhere else to make the public aware of this.
Unfortunately, in my present environment, the answer to that is a little difficult because I've been more critical of the press for not making the public fully aware.
Gentlemen, I think that our time is up. I'm sorry to have to interrupt, but I see that our time has gone very rapidly. We'll have to save all those questions until the next time General Medeiros is with us, and we hope that'll be soon.
Monitor sends its thanks to Major General John B. Medeiros, the commander of the Army Ordnance Missile Command, and to the members of the Meet the Press panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. The participants today were Peter Hackes of NBC News, May Craig of the Portland Press Herald, Charles Cordry of United Press International, Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch sitting in for Lawrence Spivak, who returns next week.